And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA in Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, swooshing in to the KPFA to kiss the ground of the mothership, because we'll be presenting on the Scheherazadian and also my birthday tour. Tonight we'll be at Open Secret in San Rafael, and we're waiving the reserve fee, so just show up at the door. It's the same as the reserve price, 7 p.m. That will be with wonderful Emma Kayla Gaston, and a special, beautiful closing, ooh, so sweet, heart-opening from David Grimes. So our theme is Scheherazade is the Earth. I will be presenting also at Bioneers Friday at 9:10 p.m. in the exhibit hall. It's part of the all-inclusive deal if you are registered for Friday or the whole weekend. But you can also just show up at the door and pay a very tiny price right at the door. Show up before 9 p.m. to get in. And again, that will be with Emma Kayla Gaston and wonderful David Grimes closing us out with a beautiful heart-opening prayer. So the theme is Scheherazade is the Earth. Scheherazade is the quintessential compassionate trickster redeemer, animating the power of the woman storyteller to liberate all women, the land, the trees, we're going to bring that in, and even the tyrant who has hardened his heart. She guides us all to wed the earth. We remember that after the 1001 Nights, the frame story of Scheherazade, you know, the land is being laid to waste by the sociopathic king who does not trust women, and so each night he beds a virgin and kills her before sunrise. Ah, so the land is getting pretty sparse of virgins. So Scheherazade, the daughter of the Grand Wazir, volunteers. And they go, no, you don't need to, don't do this. And she goes, no, watch this. So at the beginning night, she tells a story that is so beguiling and not finished as dawn arrives that he can't kill her. He's like, no, what's another night? And it goes on for 1001 nights, by which time she has become his redeemer. He refers to her, you have saved me from my own hardened heart. Not only that, but you have saved the world. And it's a wonderful, wonderful, long, beautiful, great story being reanimated. Salman Rushdie has a novel out with basically that as well. It looks fantastic, and Deborah Felmuth, our ally from Syria, recommends it highly. It's called 2 Years, 8 Months, and 28 Nights, which of course is 1001 Days. And when Scheherazade and King Shahryar, the no longer sociopathic dingbat, finally wed at the end, she wears a gown embroidered with all the trees, all the flora and fauna of this earth. It is the heart of all great Western myths. The king and all humans must wed the land and must wed the trees. So again, I'll be at Open Secret animating this with my wonderful cohorts tonight at 7 p.m. Just show up. It will be jolly. And then that's our backstage, our green room in a sense, for the Bioneers Extravaganza Friday night, 9:10 p.m. at the Exhibit Hall. Part of the whole inclusive deal at Bioneers, bioneers.org, or just show up and pay a very tiny fee for just that performance. So, more than perfectly. Today we are speaking of trees and socialism. We're going to weave it together. But on the eve of the Bioneers Conference, in the first half of the show, we welcome fellow presenter, Tree Sister founder Claire Dakin. Claire founded Tree Sisters, having worked for 3 years as the UK coordinator for a massive agroforestry initiative in southern India called Project Green Hands, before initiating Tree Sisters. Again, treesisters.org. Through her work, she has distilled the social mobilization strategy deployed with great success in India, and now turns it towards the mobilization of women within Tree Sister. She believes and is dedicated to our ability to choose and create a human culture that respects and protects all life. Welcome, Claire.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
It's a delight. So, first, of course, you'll be presenting at Bioneers. We want to get to those panels that you're a part of and to which you're dedicated. But it is wonderful to honor our ancestors. And I'd ask you, you know, backstage, you know, are you kin? Do you love the work of the late great ancestor Wangari Maathai? And you said, ooh, yes. Do you want to say a little bit of how she has encouraged and heartened you?
Well, Wangari, I think of her more as a mountain than a woman, I have to say. She, when I think about how life is for us in the Western world and then how life was for her, how different things can stop us. You know, she wasn't stopped by a husband that thought she ought to be small and contained. A husband wasn't enough. She took on a government. You know, this woman was ostracized, beaten, put into a coma, regularly stalked. She was thrown out by her community. But she wasn't stopped. She was never satisfied. Like, that deep knowing of her truth that was, the trees are our life, they're our breath, they're our underground water, they're our soil, they're our food, in essence. That truth was more important to her than anything that life threw. She got flattened and flattened, and she just stood back up and kept on going. And she helped bring down a government. You know, she helped change the face of her country, not just politically, but also environmentally. And that level of courage just moves me to the root of my being. Mm. It's so far beyond anything that I would ever have to deal with. And for me, stepping up to try and be the front person of anything was a huge, huge ordeal. But with Wangari as a sort of luminary out front, it was just like, well, why not? You know, why not have a go? I'm not going to have to face what she faced and she managed. Isn't it worth it? You know, are my fears going to stop me? Well, they've tried, but really, no. They're just not as important as the world that we love.
That's beautifully said. What you said, the level of courage moved you to the root of your being. Yeah, so many kinned beings. I don't know if you know the work of Lily Ye, a spirit sister to you. Again, it's so great to again confer and convene everybody, you know, connected or a half an inch apart. Going, Lily was a successful artist who then said no, not enough, and she wanted to go to difficult, horrific places in the world to elicit the beauty underneath the rubble in each person. Mm-hmm. And she said, like you, she was frightened at first, and then she said, but there was a part of her that said, if you don't do this, the most important part of you will die. So she said she made herself frightened of being a coward. And I go, oh, that's very witty. That's very witty. Yeah. And then just the last thing I want to toss to you, again, mythological allies as well. When she said that, I find it so moving, and she's done such great beauty. And I love this young 12-year-old girl in the school in China that she taught for the children of migrant workers, a horrible fate. The young 12-year-old girl said, since Lily elicited my own creativity, I am no longer willing to accept the fate that was assigned me. I go, that's wonderful. And what I gave to Lily and give to you, there's an obscure Hindu goddess named Akilanda. She caught on after a great essay by Julie J.C. Peters. She is the power of a woman who is broken on the floor through catastrophe. And people love this. And she rides on the crocodile of her own fear. Woohoo! Because I know your dedication came out of a crisis of facing mortality through a difficult circumstance, right? I mean, and that's where you rose up from that. Do you want to guide us a little bit into that?
Oh my God, well, there's been so many instances of it. And I do sometimes wonder whether life sort of picks you up and throws you on the floor as hard as it possibly can to see whether you do in fact bounce.
Mm.
But, there were several things that got me towards Tree Sisters, and one of them was actually a piece of ritual theater where I had to play the Rape of the Earth. I had to play the Earth in the Rape of the Earth. And I got to be stripped of all my clothes by a group of people who were basically symbolizing the yanking and the taking and the mining and the polluting and the everything for me, whilst I sat there handing out cups of tea, endlessly symbolizing the extraordinary generosity of the earth and her ability to keep giving for as long as she can, as long as her ecosystems are actually able to function. But in the point that I was left naked and hurled myself on the floor and screamed my head off and sort of did this great sort of cathartic dying thing, I lay there realizing that we didn't get a second chance with this planet. You know, you can't put a planet into therapy. And that we were in grave danger and my whole system went into shock. And I got put back on my throne and I got dressed again, and I sat there looking at a room full of weeping people, feeling like that my insides had turned to ice. And afterwards I was given a book, and the name of it was You Can Change the World. And I sat there and started crying, and I couldn't stop crying, and I cried and I cried. And it was one of those moments where your body takes over and your mind's going, what the hell am I supposed to do now? Just remove yourself, leave the room, anything, you know, just hide. But what I realized was the pain of doing nothing whilst I was watching this world that I love fall apart had been less strong than my fears that were taking over and basically telling me that there was no point having a go, or that I couldn't, or I didn't have the skills or whatever. And in that moment, the pain of the world just took over. And it was like, you know what? My fears don't mean anything in relationship to this. I have to do this in order to stay sane. And that was the turning point. But Tree Sisters herself actually landed in a car crash. And it wasn't a bad car crash. I mean, I crashed into a tree, but I didn't hurt anything. The car was written off. The tree looked like nothing had happened. And but in terms of being given a life mission that in that moment scares you half to death and helps you realize that you're going to have to turn yourself into something completely other in order to fulfill it, you could say it was a rather difficult day. But I literally crashed into a tree, had a blinding flash of white light, and two words in the light, the experiment. And then a voice just started talking. Humanity is running out of time, but it's not over yet. It's going to take all of us rising to the challenge to get through what's coming. The single greatest threat facing humanity is fear of failure, but you can call everything you do an experiment, because you can't fail an experiment. You can only learn. At which point I said, well, what's the experiment? And back came, you have to reforest the tropics within 10 years. And then it continued. I was walking up the road carrying pieces of car, and this voice just carried on. Women are the missing piece. You have to mobilize the women. Feminine consciousness is life-based, is nurture-based, is feeling-based. You know, women, you have to reinstate feminine consciousness or it's over. And the whole project, the name, how to go about it, that we had to make it as normal to give back to life as it currently is, to take life for granted, that it needed to be crowdfunding, that it needed to be trees. Everything was given. None of this was my idea. And by the time I got home, I just had a brief. And then I panicked because it was, you know, no, sorry, got the wrong person, can't possibly do it. It's too much, it's too big. And even though I had been busily working for Project Green Hands in southern India and wondering why it was that I didn't want to do the fundraising, all I wanted to do was understand the social strategy, because I kept thinking, someone in the West has got to do this. Someone's got to do this. I've got to nail it and find them and give it to them. It never occurred to me that it would be me. So, yeah, I landed this project. I spent 9 months refuting it with every fiber I could, and it got strong enough. I mean, what do you do when you say to life, give me a purpose, give me a purpose, and then it says, well, here's your purpose? You can't really say, well, sorry, I don't want that one. Can you give me another one? And I figured, well, what do I love most about this world? And actually, it is this world. I'm not satisfied that humanity's great, extraordinary hero's journey is to end destroying all of life. I'm not satisfied with that. That doesn't feel like what we're here for. I feel as if we're here to have an extraordinary breakthrough of consciousness and have a rebalancing of a scale needed to understand our true role as custodians of life and bring this world of ours into a state of balance and harmony and beauty for all species, or all remaining species at this point. But I have to work towards that, so that's, well, my job.
No, that's good. I mean, there's much in what you say. Again, we tease it into everyone's hearts that all of us, I think, who present or presume to direct collective attention are like, oh, be foibled, we're all be foibled. But then it's the dedication going, oh, no, it's not, you know, little Caroline or little Claire or little anybody. It's what we love wants us as a partner, agent. And we go, okay, All right. I love also in the language realm, you know, working with so many indigenous people also dedicated to trees. And I love Faith Spotted Eagle in talking about the XL pipeline, which, again, against all odds, we're kind of stopping. But she said, I always call it the proposed pipeline because in my mind it is not happening. I go, ah. And then another ally of yours that you haven't met yet, you may be, but a wonderful Native American British Columbia woman went to the Congo and was working with gardens and trees, and it was a very Catholic village, and she said to the mayor and the Catholic priest, now, let me get this straight. In your Christian mythology, you get thrown out of the garden, right? They're like, yeah. And she said, well, in our mythology, we never left the garden, so we'll help you, you know, get back in there. And so, I mean, so she's kind of a teammate of yours, right? I mean, to guide back into the garden and to cooperate with the living intelligence of the trees. So treesisters.org, there's a great Indiegogo website that we can guide people to, but people can find it through treesisters.org. But you said 27,400 trees are funded. Does that mean they're in the ground, or they're reaching their little, they're trying to get to the ground, or where are they?
I would say probably 23,000 of those are in the ground and growing.
Wow.
Possibly some of them are waist height as we speak. I mean, that's last year.
Ooh.
And there's a whole, you know, another chunk of money's just gone out. So those will be seeded. Well, actually, the rains have come early this year. So there'll be planting happening now, and there'll be more more of those trees will be there for next year.
And where are they? You're reforesting the tropics. Yes, yes. Wonderful soils. The sequestration of CO2. Yeah, a lot of allies working on, again, trees.
Reforesting the tropics, starting in India.
Yeah,
so
okay.
That's Tamil Nadu, southern India.
Oh, beautiful. That's great. And another ally you might want to check out, also a friend of the show, Diana Beresford Kroger, is an extraordinary woman born in Ireland, orphaned at an early age, born into a Druid lineage, raised by Druids, then goes to Harvard, gets her doctorate and a million things in trees. And so she is scientifically proving Druid lore. She lives in the north of Canada, and again, she goes, no, we're working with the trees. But it is true, the heartbreaking devastation. But she also guides us into this incredible respect for the intelligence of trees. She goes, walk into a pine forest, you always come out smarter because of the pine aerosols. If you're lonely, sit under a willow tree because the salicylic acid will heal your sense of kinship. Women take walnuts and crush the seed. You know, so many people even haven't crushed the skin, haven't done that. It smells like lemon. It smells delicious. She said, rub it on your forearm. It will protect you from breast cancer. Anyway, so that's all Druid lore that she's proved. So even the Harvard grown-ups go, oh, there's science to this. It's like a friend, Steve Behrman, goes, sure, it works in practice, but does it work in theory? But in this case, both. All right. So there's, you know, the tree women, that is great. And, You are, you know, an ally of Nina Simons, co-founder of Bioneers, and you're going to be doing a co-presentation with Nina at Bioneers, yes?
Yes, we are on Saturday. It's called Integral Leadership That Reclaims the Feminine.
Excellent. And that's Saturday when?
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm telling you. No, it is. Yeah, no, that's Saturday at 4:30.
That's great. So
I'm doing another one on Sunday at 2:45 called Reinstating Feminine and Our Right to Thrive.
Yes. So you are dedicated again to the, we'd say, you know, in the mytho language, you know, Venus. Well, you did your ritual theater, Rape of the Earth thing, which is kind of Inanna going to the underworld and then rising back up. And you've kind of done it. You know, when you were backstage, you're like, I forgot what adorable British phrase you used, but plank, something like plank. You go, I'm not big on I don't know astrology or myth or whatever. What's the plank thing?
Thick as a short plank.
Right. That's very adorable. But you're not, because you've lived it. You know, the myth of Inanna, which is Venus, is she goes to the underworld. The rape story is much later, but she at first volunteers to go to the underworld to a funeral for an old age that's passing, we might say dominance, and then she comes back up. And she gets her mission, right? So you did this. She comes back up, and she's like, wow, that was intense, but now I know what I want to do. And she decides that she must sail in her little wooden boat made of trees to the island of Enki, who has stolen human culture and left empty celebrity baubles in its place. And being a Claire Dakin kind of woman hero, she doesn't go, ah, yeah. She goes and she gets him drunk on poetry and beauty and kinship and telling him about trees, undoubtedly. And as he listens to that, it's an important sidebar of sophisticated Sumerians 2,500 years ago. Anything unchallenged, even Enki, the god of wisdom, will become tyrannical. And the woman often challenges. So as she gets him drunk on beauty and poetry, and you, this is part of your theater, he gives back to her what he's stolen. And he leads with the erotic arts, and he leads with the vulva, which is also how this part of the myth, he goes, I give to you the fantastic feminine erotic arts. It's the lead element in culture. It's very adorable. And then he goes, oh, and the phallus as well, here you go, and then here comes real estate and science and everything else. So she takes all that and sails towards, and he wakes up, you know, and goes, where's human culture? And his assistant says, you got drunk, you gave it back, and there she is on the horizon. So he does send demons after her. I want to bring this into your life. But she's so pumped up with her sisterhood. She's with her best friend, her Sukal, two women, right? She's so pumped up with the joy of the feminine friendship and the thing that she fends off the demons with alacrity. And that's how Inanna, Venus, and Claire Dakin as her human stand-in, you know, brings culture and kinship back to humans. And then it can have a wise culture and save the earth and plant trees. So anyway, so you did it. You don't need to know myth, Claire. You lived that thing. So isn't that kind of strong and adorable?
It's strong and adorable and very apt.
Yeah.
You know? And I would like to. I mean, I don't know whether it's ever possible to have the wild breakthrough without a tour to the underworld. I would love to think that it is possible, but I don't know many who have woken up truly. I mean, an awful lot of very dissatisfied people out there who don't know how to acknowledge that they are dissatisfied and don't know where to look inside themselves for the more of themselves that is longing to come through. But it would be really nice if we didn't have to crash trees or, you know, go to hell. But maybe you, it's just part of the whole process.
Well, we do wonder. I mean, it is an old rhythm, and it is the Venus cycle of Venus being the evening star, and then she disappears, called going to the underworld, and that's the myth is the astronomical Venus cycle, and then she reemerges, which is what she's doing right now, as the morning star. This is Inanna returning to the world, and you know, again, what I said to you backstage, part of the guiding, heartening, experimental, you know, story is that Uranus, the trickster, in cahoots with Venus, the woman trickster, gets ready to bound onto the world stage, you know, already, but even more fully as we approach the winter solstice. So we go, yeah, we vote for that. That's a good story.
Well, one of the things I feel or I've experienced in many tours to the underworld is a real shift in my perspective from, you know, when I had the car crash, the message was very clear, you know, women and nature have shared a common history. And basically, you know, women are horribly wounded and nature is horribly wounded. And I kind of lived into that for a while, really feeling, you know, yes, why is it that so many women don't step into leadership? Why is it that we defer to the men? Why is it blah, 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 and it's all about the wounding? But actually, the more I have, like, gone down there myself and sort of swamped around and tried to figure out who the hell I am and who I'm not, the more I feel like actually there is a vast amount of feminine energy that is completely pure, untouched, incredibly powerful, very strong, just waiting for us to turn away from an outmoded story as women towards what's just latent in all of us, which is not wounded at all.
Right.
That knows exactly who she is, knows exactly what she's for, and I think this rising tide is simply you cannot hold life down for terribly long before it will rebound. It will do it itself. I think she's coming whether we want it or not. And I think it's coming through all of us, men and women, whether we want it or not. And I think if we have our backs to it, it's going to wash us over and drag us along the ocean floor. And if we turn towards it, we can consciously choose how we get picked up, and actually start to travel in a direction that is life-based, that we want, that makes sense to our hearts.
Yes. Just so. And I think it is that I love the kind of pagan Venusian reframe. They say scars are where power enters into our body and our lives. So, you know, as you've been metabolizing, I, you know, work with so many people who often go, trauma, my trauma, my trauma. And I go, yes, how about next time you want to use the word trauma, you replace it with my dangerous, beautiful assignment, you know? Because that's what you distilled, your dangerous, beautiful assignment.
Yeah, my mission to grow.
Yeah, and cooperators are standing by. I mean, you're forming a partnership with the trees, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of the Venusian, you know, or you call the feminine leadership model, which is we're not doing it alone. You brought up a very crucial theme, experiment. You know, in kind of astro mythology, Uranus is nature's evolutionary experimental ingenuity or indigenuity, as Curtis Catawba says, which has no category about success fail. It's like, try that, yeah. You know, and that's what's partnering again with the kind of Venusian model now, going, okay, experiment, call forth, going, hello, it's Claire, it's Caroline, we're willing to work with trees, you know, and sometimes we cry out and there's nothing coming back going, hello. But sometimes, you know, you must have this, you call out and, you know, hello, it's Claire, you know, and then there's this resounding like, hello, Claire. Right? I mean, there's a call and response, right? You think?
Yeah. Oh, no, I think there totally is. And I also think one of the extraordinary things that's happened to us at this time of history is we've become so disconnected from nature. We see ourselves so separately from it. We don't consider there to be an intelligence there. But actually, this being that we are part of, literally, you know, one minute you were a very small thing, now you're a rather tall thing. What exactly is it that you think you took on board in order to become tall? You're walking, talking planet. You know, we're not separate. We are completely and utterly indivisible. And that intelligence that has been evolving for billions of years is also the intelligence that's in our bodies. So if we were actually to stop thinking that our mind was everything and that our brain and how we've been taught and what we've inherited was the sum total of who we are, and we actually thought, actually the sum total of who I am is this enormous living, breathing ecosystem that is extraordinarily intelligent in ways that I can't even fathom, but perhaps I can start to tune into it and augment my intelligence with that. Well, the thing that blew me away, because when I had the car crash, I really had no idea what it meant to be a woman. I was just one of those women that was busy trying to be a man, thinking that was it. But
What do you mean? You were learning to fly bombing airplanes? What do you mean?
I was just doing a very good rendition, being, you know, plowing straight over the top of my own cycle, keeping my emotionality to a certain way, using my mind in a certain way. But actually, we're womb beings. Like, women are plugged into the lunar cycles. Our consciousness shifts with every phase of the moon. And how many of us actually understand that? How many of us know the power that we carry in our body, or the way that we can work with our own hormone cycle, a bleeding cycle, to actually plug into a much greater intelligence? And, you know, when Einstein says, it's going to take a completely different kind of intelligence, this is a really bad rendition of that quote, but you know the one I'm talking about. You know, you can't solve a problem with the level of intelligence that created it. We've lived in a patriarchal society that has suppressed life cycles, whether it's in a woman's body or the seasonal flows that teach us how to actually listen to life and harvest appropriately rather than expecting it to grow all the time. We don't follow. But if we could start to honor the greater intelligence that lives us and open to a different wisdom that can come through us, I think we can find creativity and solutions from a different quality of consciousness that is essentially feminine, or at least feminine in a harmonious and respectful relationship with the masculine.
Yeah, and I understand it's the dance of Venus and Mars, but it is in accord. And I love you know, John Burdett quoting a Thai saying, because we were never colonized, we never lost our animism. So we go, everything alive, and cooperators are standing by, eager to cooperate, to be, you know, Venus invites, going, help, we need some help, we want to do this project, oh, hello. You know, and the lack of animism is colonized mind, and the restoration of intimacy and collaborative dynamic. That's wonderful. Do you have a let's put out again treesisters.org. You're doing so many important, beautiful projects that people can join, and you will be at bioneers.org. I am standing by our guest Bob Goff for the second half. But do you have a blessing you'd like to waft out, and a blessing you'd like to receive for your dedication?
Well, I'd like to put out a request,
which is
we are right now 15 days from the end of our Indiegogo campaign, and if you've ever done one, they're pretty hair-raising. We're 40% of the way there. This is to actually shift Tree Sisters to the next level. This is to build the infrastructure and create the films and the outreach strategy needed to launch us properly early spring next year so that we can get to 100,000 trees per month by the end of next year in extraordinary countries like Madagascar or Nepal or Borneo. And to do it, we need help, and we need the help of people who not just love the environment but are actually willing to do something concrete on behalf of it, which is to say, yes, we can get on to the website is growtreesisters.com. growtreesisters.com. If you could go and help, I would love you for eternity, and you will know that you are part of the foundations of something that will change the face of the planet.
Beautiful. And the trees are rooting. They go, yes, yes, and we might not want to make this project concrete. We might want to make it, I don't know, sensual
and absolutely. Gorgeous.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much, Claire Dakin. I will see you at Bioneers, bioneers.org. Claire will be presenting over the weekend on her own, and also with Nina Simons, the co-founder of Bioneers. Thank you very much, Claire.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Wonderful. We're going to have a very short break right now, musical break, while our second half of show, we welcome the return of Bob Goff, lawyer for the Lakota Sioux, Institute of Green-Red Energy, and collaborative cahoots with many great allies, renewable energy on reservations, to speak of American socialism. And we will weave this into trees. Yes, we will. And we'll be right back after a very short break.
She shook the constellation that dazzled them crossed his eyes. She shook the constellation that dazzled and crossed his eyes. She showered his head with quasar and made his tortoise cry.
Off and down.
Shiny, 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 come blow my shiny home. Ooh, shiny, 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 come blow my shiny home. Grab my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, here in Berkeley at the mothership KPFA, kissing its, carpet, feeling roots going down from feet into through the KPFA floors into the earth. Nam, 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 nam. Remember Teresita's Aztec granny teaching her to do this, and Teresita says, "Does this mean I can't ever be hurt?" And her Aztec granny says, "No, child, we all get hurt. It means you can't be overpowered." We call it nice distinction. So let us feel, even if you're driving, feel the roots going down from your feet through the whatever it is, into the earth. Going and also KPFA's roots. And hey, thank you everyone who stepped up to support KPFA in the fall fund drive. It was a hoot, and it was successful. We can do this. Roots, so even greater roots. And so standing by in the green room, we welcome the return of Bob Goff. I saw him on the Bioneers website, but that was just a clever ruse because he actually sent, Apache allies in his place to honor sacred sites, but we'll get to that too. But lawyer for the Lakota Sioux, Institute of Green Red Energy, Renewable Energy and Reservations, to speak of American socialism, and Bernie. Welcome, Bob.
How nice it is to follow Claire's wonderful half-hour program. That's wonderful.
Excellent. That's good. So can we weave trees and socialism? Can you do it? I toss you.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's do that.
Absolutely. And it's not just the gardens, it's the gatherers. Indigenous peoples have that same harmonious perspective. And looking at the work that's going on right now down throughout the Pacific Islands, where the breadfruit forests once reigned supreme, many of them have been cut down, but there are lots of just individual small stands of breadfruit trees, as an example, which produce an abundant fruit, more fruit than can be used by the people who live around and near and under these trees. And 90% of the fruit goes to waste, which basically means goes right back, returns again. So there's an abundance there, ripe for the picking, if you will. And all it requires is people to participate in that. But the fruit doesn't last too long. It only lasts about 3 or 4 days if it's picked. And right now we're trying to find very low-tech, harmoniously compatible ways of aggregating small individuals, families that can pick this, rather than looking at trees. And I was astounded by the numbers of trees they want to plant, and I hope it's not all the same species in plantations. I hope that it's a mix of trees, the diversity of trees, because the monoculture, whether it's dependence on fossil fuels, corn in rows for miles to the horizon, or trees in plantations, all of those are an imbalance. And we are looking now, I think, in an age where we must look for, recognize, and enhance those things that bring balance rather than contribute and manifest the imbalance. And I'm so sad that I can't be at Pioneers. We're delighted that a youth group from the Apache Nation, who are going to talk about the sacred sites issues down in their country, where the rites of passage for the women have been conducted for millennia, are now being awarded by the government to a mining company to address that project and that issue right now. They are the people who will be standing in our place at the Bioneers, because we wanted to make sure that those young people have this voice and have a good opportunity at Pioneers.
And of course, with what Claire Dakin has reminded us, it's more than horrifically ironic that the rites of passage of women are awarded to a mining company.
Exactly. I mean, but your articulation of, if you don't listen to what the gods, the stars, have to tell us, they'll only speak louder. And we see that again and again going on right now with the politics, and how Bernie Sanders has fearlessly put socialism and a different, an alternative to capitalism, which has become cancerous for the entire planet. He's brought it into the political discourse, and the self-destructive Republican Party now are immediately equating that with communism and all the boogeyman parts of all of that. And you had Donald Trump just calling Bernie Sanders a maniac socialist / communist. He was not listening to what Bernie had to say, even during that very abbreviated piece of the debate the other night about what democratic socialism really is, and the fact that America, the European America, was built on socialism. It's what the Pilgrims and the Mayflower Compact was all about. It's what working for that community, finding ways for the community to work together for the common good, is all about. It's what produces most of the power throughout the vast middle red part of the country. If you look at the maps, the political maps of the maps of which states have been carried by what political parties, you see the blue on the coasts, east and west coast, and the northern coast around the Great Lakes, and a good deal of the heartland of the country, the rest, the middle is the red, the Republican voters, and you realize that the aversion of socialism and the aversion to communism that people like Donald Trump are stirring up now, those places are the beneficiaries of American socialism. And the most socialist organization in this country is the U.S. military. People fail to see. This is what Bernie Sanders is talking about. We get our electricity on the Great Plains from the federal government dams that were built by taxpayers' money, the whole country putting it together so that rural people could have electricity. That is a socialist system. The co-ops that were organized by the farmers to be able to distribute that electricity, that those cooperatives are a realization and a manifestation of the socialist kinds of principles, where the people who are directly affected and participating in this own that means of production and benefit from it, get to call the shots. That's the kind of socialism that is the backbone, really, of America. But we focus on the republic side of what we call our country. We skip over the better parts of our democratic process. We don't always include all of the people. In fact, we're now in processes of limiting the voters. We want exclusion. And we're seeing states excluding people
yes.
who can vote
oh.
and the like.
Right. And outrageous. I mean, even in my home state of Maryland, outside D.C., they're closing voting stations in populated urban areas and opening them in remote white areas with no public transport. It's like, hey, flag on that play, naked creepiness.
Exactly.
You know, and being caught out going, oh, you saw us, so okay. But it is outrageous. But yeah, so you watch the debate, right? The Democratic debate.
Sure did.
Yep. I love Andy Borowitz so much. You know, is sat there. First he said, you know, Bernie Sanders commits, you know, egregious, catastrophic political error by treating others with civility and respect. And we go, yes, he did. And then today Borowitz says, strong debate ratings make CNN consider introducing substance into programming. No. Well, it was. Befoibled, yes, befoibled, of course. We're going to address these issues of how do we become politically, spiritually influential tonight at Open Secret. I'll be at Open Secret at 7 p.m. tonight. There you go. Just show up. Pay modest fee at the door. Leading to Bioneers tomorrow night, 9, 10 p.m. You can come. Modest fee at the door. In the memosphere, how do we create the atmosphere where the desirable can happen? But let me toss this to you, and of course you can go anywhere you want. I'm really working on the difference. Americans have such a hard time distinguishing between the con man and the trickster. And it's the latter, nature's evolutionary ingenuity, trickster, that liberates us from the con. But there's Donald Trump. And I think that, you know, part of our strategy is that people mistake Donald Trump for the truth-telling trickster, to hell with how things are done, but he's the con, you know, and for all of us to go, no, here's the guiding story over here, better deal, there we go, and I'll liberate that. Because you cross borders a lot, right? I mean, you talk to...
Absolutely.
Right.
And Donald Trump has been bankrupt any number of times. His companies, various companies, have gone bankrupt. All bankruptcy is a socializing
uh-huh.
of the cost of his bad business decisions. And then he goes back to the entrepreneurial mode to make another $1 million. But he has taken advantage of the socialized opportunities available to him in our American democratic socialist system.
Yes.
He doesn't want to admit it, and he'll point a finger to the others, but he's fooled himself well enough and is, you know, still busy fooling others.
No, I think that's really important. Let's all put this in our magic backpacks, going, bankruptcy is an act of socialism. There we go. but as you said, you know, the entire grid, the collaborative endeavor. Now, Hillary, doing better at debate, you know, nothing more dangerous than a witch who doesn't know she's a witch. She did engage in very bad witchcraft in the original 2008 thing, and which, when, you know, Barack Obama was ahead, and she's like, oh, you know, he could get killed before the convention. Where, you know, we go, no, bad flag on that play. You know, practicing witchcraft without a license. You know, 10-yard penalty. And this year, a couple months ago, she was saying, oh, Bernie, he's really gotten a free ride from the press. They don't know. They haven't mentioned that he's a socialist. I'm like, Hillary, bad behavior. No. Oh, Joe Biden. Oh, will he run? Oh, I can't imagine running myself with that much grief. But no, hey, flag on that play. All right, now back to you. Right again. So I guess it really is. Well, Bernie, so pretty lucid, and you know, nobody's perfect. All right, everybody. All right, everybody listening. Of course, you had guns. Right, Palestine. Not right. Nobody's perfect. I love Pat Ewing, my political spiritual ally, saying, you know, leaders are designed to be disappointing, so that we don't outsource our leadership to them. They're all befoibled. You know, we want to elect a story, and who's a willing partner? And, you know, Bernie's doing a good role in the mystery play right now, right?
He's doing a wonderful job, and the beauty is the Democratic debate was his national debutante's ball.
Uh-huh, right.
It was the unveiling of Bernie Sanders to the nation.
Right.
And that is what all the pundits failed to appreciate.
Yes.
That is why he was out-Googled. He out-Googled all the other newcomers 2-1. People wanted to know who that guy was.
Right.
And, you know, the fact that CNN wouldn't even, reference their own poll, the one they did on Facebook, and declaring Hillary the winner of the debate. Well, I love that lady. She's wonderful. I love a lot of witches. But this is her, like, 25th debate, national debate. She ought to know how to do this pretty well. This was Bernie's first national debate, other than his standing up in Congress and in the Senate over the years. But everyone who watched it outside of the bubble, every poll of regular folks watching what was going on, clearly said, hands down, Bernie won it. But the media doesn't report that. And I had the thought that you know, Bernie's pushing these economic issues, the idea of the 1%, which was just unveiled, you know, within the last 4 or 5 years with the Occupy movement, and all of a sudden we all realize we're the 99%. And for America to see themselves together, unified, in a percentage other than that 1%, and seeing the difference that's where all the wealth has been going for the vast majority, Bernie's pointing out all these obvious things that have never been fully reported by the news and by the corporations. It's not in their interests to do that, of course. But the fact that he has just won every poll. I'm looking at a sheet here, the Drudge Report poll had Bernie by 54%. CNN Live viewer poll, 84%.
Wow.
I mean, Slate.com, 72%. U.S. News, 82. MSNBC, 65. Time, 74. He won them all. But that's not what they reported in the headlines of the major newspapers.
Right, and the New York Times was shame on New York. Well, no, never mind. They've done so many horrible things anyway. But yeah, they did that. So, but that's also part of the dynamic of, you know, again, awakening up and you know, educational discourse and having intelligent conversation and Bernie playing what he represents, sane reverence, really. How about the climate and the crisis on the earth was mentioned mentioned for the first time in political debate in quite a while. That was
exactly. Exactly. Climate change is another one of these things that is affecting everything. It's fundamental, and it goes without being reported. It's in the same blackout hole that the media keeps burning in. And now these things are coming out in every direction and every opportunity. People are not going to have to connect the dots pretty soon. The dots will overwhelm them.
I know Bernie's doing pretty well with kind of Reagan Democrats and working class and is Bernie's message reaching your allies on the res?
It's reaching throughout rural America in great ways, and in fact I would not be surprised to see him capturing a lot of not just independent, but libertarian even right-wing Republican votes because of his position on gun control, which, you know, doesn't pass the Democrats' litmus test. And that was where Hillary was poking him. And I think civilized societies understand you've got to get some regulation. I mean, well-regulated is part of that Second Amendment, and we've got to include that. But we can't just completely outlaw guns. That's not going to happen in this country, in this society.
No one's talking about that, really.
Everyone, the right is always saying the Democrats are going to come to take them away. And here you've got a Democrat who's got a good chance, an independent running as a Democrat, who has a good chance of getting to a national election and being able to appeal to those voters as well. The voters on the right who, you know, hold their gun rights sacred. Well, he's sort of respecting what his rural constituency in Vermont holds sacred. And you got to honor a man for representing his constituents in that regard. But I think it may be a plus in the general election to have him pull from both sides of the aisle, if you will.
Yes, it is. It is a mystery. I mean, I don't want our team to engage in what Steve Behrman calls a yearning disability. Going, Bernie, because see, Bernie as a teammate, as a great agent of, you know, sane, reverent discourse, and so good in the debate, really, but he's perfect for you can't make him glamorous or a celebrity or a star. He's not that, which is perfect. So people go, Bernie. No, it's like Bernie, teammate. But I don't want people practicing tantrum yoga either, the yearning disability going, and if Bernie doesn't win, then I'm not. And it's like, no, cooperate with everything, inch by inch. There we go. Come on. But it does represent something appropriately positively, you know, Uranian trickster, agent of sane discourse spreading across the land, just like, you know, there used to be really smart in the 1930s and before Great Suppression, great gatherings of people from, you know, working class about, you know, how shall we govern and how shall, you know, and then the larger task bestowed to all of us to cooperate with the guiding genius of nature. You know, we're electing a story of humans humbly cooperating with the guiding genius of nature to come back into, you know, manners. And, you know, Bernie's pretty good on that, right?
He's very good on that. And if you noticed, when they introduced, they each was given 2 minutes or so to introduce themselves. And every sentence started with I, and they all went through the same mixed bag of Congress or governor or mayor or senator or whatever the mix of positions they held. Bernie did not do any of that. He went right to what the issues were, the inequality and economics and the like, climate change, and rolled out a list of things that needed to be addressed. And he's been sticking with that.
Yep.
So it was egoless, right at the from the very beginning of the debates.
Yeah, no, it was wonderful. I was watching it with my great ally, hello Sylvia, in Vallejo, with our charts, astrological charts spread before us, and you know, and then, you know, when Hillary would go, well, what could be more radical than a woman president? Sylvia would go, you know, the energy just dropped right there, just. because it did, you know, again, you know, what's the energetic dynamic going, oh, no, flag on that play, you know, there's no energy to that thing. Back into the issues. So it looks like, you know, again, all of us engaged in, you know, having a smart conversation, and I love, you know, inaugurate comes from the augur diviner within all of us walking out into nature, and nature would go, you know, who's the responsible human, and then we would inaugurate them. But it does seem we're inaugurating a story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, good.
Exactly. And we're, I mean, the observation that's been pointed out is, you know, could America elect a Jewish person president?
Mm.
Well, this one happened to have also been a carpenter as a young man.
Mm.
And we do celebrate, as a country, a Jewish carpenter.
There you go.
For his behavior, his humility, and for his grace amongst us sinners.
And occasionally his tempers. His temper.
Exactly.
And Bernie has that too. Yeah, again, we're all foibled. I have people who work with him going, oh, he's irascible, you know. And we go, yeah, all right, you know, nobody's perfect. Nor should they be, really. In some ways. So, yes. And again, this, you know, I like that, you know, everybody right now, it's like, who brought what to this party? Okay. And everybody kind of gathering their medicine bundles and, you know, what they've been doing. And I do like that Trickster, you know, throws a lightning bolt at the circle of complacency and habit and turns it into a spiral. I mean, it's all wide open now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the animated monstrosity known as Donald Trump that's, you know, emerged from some, you know, horrific demonic realm, is, you know, again, we want to, you know, going, ah, no, that's the toxic mimic of the thing over here. And I do think there's a, well, we'll see. You know, a shift. I love, again, my ally Sylvia Henley saying, you know, when Mars was in Leo, right on Donald Trump's ascendant, he's got Mars in Leo rising. It's perfect. He is such a great con. And Mars represents what people kind of want when, you know, what sign it's in. They wanted bread and circuses. But now it's in Virgo, which is the medicine, refinement, diagnosis quality. So we might suck the chi out of the toxic mimic and exhale it into the guiding story. But all right, we're on our way out all too soon. Thanks again to Claire Dagan out there, but also to yourself. What blessings would you like, oh agent of breadfruit?
Oh. Hadn't heard that.
Oh, put it in your bio.
Sure. The blessings that I would like to see are for the, we once talked about 1,000 points of light under previous administrations.
Yeah.
I would like the millions and billions and trillions of points of light above us and below us and around us and within us, all connected by a consciousness that says, balance and being in touch with the feminine does not necessarily require any gender specification.
Right. Beautiful. Yes, Venus and Mars rule within us, reside within us. Again, the Green Man. We love the Calm Weaver in Terry Pratchett's latest book, Who Becomes a Witch, and then the women guarding all that you say. It is all within us. Thank you so much, ally in perpetuity, Bob Goff, and I will cahoot with you telepathically over the weekend and more soon in many forms.
The pleasure is mine. Give love to everyone at the Bioneer.
I will. Thanks always to Erica Bridgman. Yay, in Berkeley. I get to see her in person. Hello, you wonderful person. You are great. I will be at Open Secret tonight at 7. Just show up at the door. Same prices, reserve tickets. There with Fantastic. I'm Michaela Gaston and David Grimes also. And also Bioneers, 9:10 p.m. at the Exhibit Hall in the San Marin Civic Center. There we go. And we will reconvene next week. Thank you so much. Caroline Casey, Coyote Network News. Woof, woof, woof. Mwah.
Cisneros, great Latina author of The House on Mango Street, Woman Hollering Creek, and Caramelo, is coming to Berkeley, and I'm inviting you to be present. Sandra will be discussing her new book, A House of My Own, Stories from My Life, on Tuesday, November 3rd, 7:30 p.m. at the First Congregational Church of Berkeley, 2345 Channing Way. This is Vilma V, and I'll be hosting this KPFA benefit. There's wheelchair access, and tickets are available at brownpapertickets.com and supportive indie bookstores. For more information about November 3rd, go to kpfa.org. Sandra Cisneros in Berkeley. Nos vemos ahí.
It is both reassuring and invigorating that Robert Reich will present his latest book on November 12th in Berkeley. Former Secretary of Labor under Clinton, Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at UC Berkeley, and author of 14 books, the thoroughly engaging Robert Reich will discuss Saving Capitalism for the Many, Not the Few, at Berkeley's First Congregational Church, 2345 Channing Way. There's wheelchair access at this KPFA benefit. I'm Sasha Lilly, and I get to host. Economist Joseph Stiglitz praises Reich for this riveting guide to how our economic and political system has become so badly flawed and so distorted that wholesale reform is needed. Tickets are available at Brown.